It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. A couple different things about things this time. And it's not the cat. Although the cat usually... Oh, no. The cat doesn't like the recording. No. You'll note I didn't lean forward to turn on the recording.
Oh, yeah.
That's because I recently purchased a trackball mouse. And it was extremely weird to begin with. But I am surprised at how quickly I've gotten used to it.
I've used trackballs. Just a few days. Yeah, it doesn't take long.
It's very nice, and I'm glad because over the years, the touchpad is not great in general, but I keep my laptop on my lap, and that doesn't work. So now it's on one leg, and then on the other leg is the trackball. And over the years, I think because of positioning, I've had this on other laptops too. The touchpad starts to sort of wear out or cause things where it'll click when I don't want it to click and stuff like that. So I'm very excited for this. I specifically did this mostly because I was playing a game that it was easier to have something like this. But and I think this might in general open up more PC game options for me overall. So that's the one thing. And then the other thing, so this Saturday we played D&D. And it did that thing where it kicked me out constantly again. Like bam, 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 like 8 times in a row. And I was like, well, shit. And so I decided I had one answer left, which is maybe whatever it is something to do with the software that's actually installed on my machine. So I opened up the, did it through the web browser and it worked fine. And so that's what I'm doing right now. And in fact, have plugged back in my old HD camera.
Yeah, you look different.
Yeah. Well, I also had a haircut, but but yeah, the webcam. It's not ideal in that there are some settings that aren't there, but I don't really care. And I haven't had, occasionally it says your connection is unstable, but it doesn't do anything. So I think this may be the way going forward. It means I have to record to the cloud. But as I found out from before, that's not a problem. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that gives you 1% of your daily riboflavin per episode. Don't ask us how. Trade secret. It's only 1%. So you have to listen to like or watch it like 100. Actually, we really need to label these. I'm not positive if it's the same. I don't know if that's audio only or video. I don't know that they're the same. Anyway, we'll get back to it. But the point is, you should watch our podcast if you're pregnant or want to become pregnant. That's what riboflavin's is the big one for pregnant ladies, I think. Or is that folic acid, which is not the same?
I don't know.
Nutrition is a scam. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 677.
677. And hopefully it will not freeze up. It is funny, I have my HD cam now, so I can tell I have better resolution than you do.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But it's funny, when I have the other, you look crystal clear. But now that I have this, I'm like, eh, you're a little fuzzy. of course, I also just shaved, so maybe that's part of it. I don't know. For those of you just joining us, I apologize. Apparently, for once, you can hear the washing machine in the background. It is on the spin cycle, so it's almost done. But William says he can hear it. Maybe he can't, and he just said that to hurt me. But in case that's not the case, I apologize. It should be over soon. But our sound quality has never been our strong suit. In fact, we're still figuring out what our strong suit is.
Yeah, do we have a strong suit?
Put it in the comments or go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. But it's definitely not audio. Anyway, what was I saying? We have a hat. It is magic. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like to write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with stuff, questions, comments, topics, whatevs. The hat magically, all on its own, forwards the emails to us. We read them, talk about them. That's it, except most of the time we just talk about whatever we want. It is not much of a format. You have to really just sort of be into us. And lucky for us, most people are. We're a hit with the humans. Actually, no. I was very excited because, like, I subscribe to our YouTube now, so it pops up, like, when there's a new one and stuff. Okay. And I popped it up, and within a couple hours, we had 2 views, and I was very excited by that because my expectations are low. It has now been, like, 5 days, still 2 views. So well, I do actually know some people still listen to the audio version, which is definitely more convenient. So, yeah, and I don't know how many of those. Anyway, how's your week been?
That's okay. We saw the second Aquaman movie. Saw that.
Oh, the Lost Kingdom.
Lost Kingdom, yeah.
The final thing that made me realize I probably just shouldn't watch films with Patrick Wilson in them.
Mm.
To be fair, I don't watch them very often. He's frequently in movies that I'm like, I don't want to see that. But every once in a while, I accidentally see something within him, and I've been realizing I usually don't like him when I do. Mm. And I don't think, again, this is a thing that happens. It is just, you know, correlation is not causation. I do not think Patrick Wilson is a bad actor. I believe whoever is choosing Patrick Wilson's projects does not consider my viewing preferences when doing so.
Wasn't he in the Watchmen movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, great example. Great example.
Yeah.
I recently saw him in The Tall Grass. Did not enjoy that movie. He's in all the Conjuring shit and all the Conjuring-esque shit. Yeah. And in The Aquaman. So how did you feel about the second to last or last DCEU film? Part of the death rattle of the DCEU.
I think it's the last one. I think it's the last one.
That one, Flash, and the second Shazam were all kind of just the death. Those were the ones that everybody knew were dead before they were actually out the door.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, what'd you think?
I liked it. I mean, it's not high art or anything.
You but, liked the first one, yes?
Yeah, I liked it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's anything I'd recommend to anyone other than, say, a DC fan. But yeah, it was fine. I mean, my standards for these things is kind of set by, you know, now that we've had a decade of tons of superhero movies, you kind of start to develop a sense of, you know, what kind of criteria you can use to evaluate them. Right. It's kind of like it's kind of like
on a curve.
Yeah, exactly. Horror movies are the same, right? You finally get to a place where you're like, okay, you know, there's going to be that standout piece of horror that's like good art, right? Like just about anyone can look at this and say it's great. But for the most part, you can't fairly evaluate horror movies or television the same as other types of, I don't think.
Well, and when it's repeated things, you start to know. Just the other day, Trish found a trailer for me for a horror movie coming up, or not coming up, one from, I think, Thailand from a while ago. And I watched the trailer and I'm like, yep. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I've seen that movie a ton of times, but I will continue to see that kind of movie. So, and I looked it up and it's like 2 hours. I'm like, that's probably too long. But I'm like, inherently, I have nothing against this movie. I also could never see this movie and I'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I feel like superhero movies have, there've been enough of them now that there finally is kind of a genre identity, if you will, where you can, okay, this is these, this is the criteria that I would judge a movie by. And this isn't, and you also sort of establish like what you consider you benchmarks. Like for me, Iron Man is still a benchmark, more so than the Nolan movies, more so than, yeah. I feel like the Nolan movies are so niche that really for the general sense of superhero movies, to me, Iron Man is still a benchmark. And neither this
to
movie.
Be fair, he's a hardcore Terrence Howard stan, so that may be part of it.
So neither this movie, Aquaman movie, or the previous one is like meets that criteria. So it's not anything like that. But I would say that it is, you know, Marvel movies that I would say that I enjoyed and that I would like, if I was at someone's house and they said, hey, should we watch this? Put a Marvel movie in here. I'd go, oh yeah, that was a good one. Let's watch that. I'd say that these both Aquaman movies rose to those standards, which is to say that there's a lot of CGI in it. It's not a really deep story.
Apparently, Addy disagrees strongly.
There's a lot of CGI in it. Some of it not great. The story's not groundbreaking or anything, but it's fun. I mean, a lot of Marvel superhero movies and some of the DC ones too weren't great art, but they were fun. Which to me is, it's kind of like horror, where it's like, the story's not great, the writing's not great, sometimes the acting's not great, but it's effective horror, or it's fun. It's just fun to watch.
Yeah,
I think that's a valid criteria for superhero movies, and it was fun. But I also acknowledge that for people who don't like comic books at all, or who don't like DC comics in particular, yeah, maybe it wouldn't be for you, but we liked it fine. And as far as the whole DCEU run goes, there was so many disappointing things, but like in terms of like characterizations, like the way characters were portrayed based on like how I like them portrayed in DC comics, I think the only disappointing character was Batman, and everybody else was, I thought, like even the Flash, even though the Flash movie was not that great, I thought the conceptualization and the execution of that character was really good. I really wish they'd have been able to do more with Cyborg, because I thought that was really good. The guy that played him did a really good job. But I feel like the DCEU, I think it suffered from just trying to keep up with Marvel and do things Marvel's way. And well, and also suffered from having Zack Snyder at the very beginning of it. That was a problem. But it might not have been as much of a problem for the run as a whole if they didn't keep trying to second guess what was going on. And I mean, I would sooner have had one long consistent thing that Zack Snyder made that I don't like because of the Zack Snyderness of it, but still it was one whole thing that I could enjoy sometimes, versus the hot mess that it is now.
From what I can tell from the outside, largely, it does seem like they sort of were prone to violent market corrections.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very much so.
DCEU was a lot of like, you don't like that? Let's try this.
Yeah, yeah.
Other total, you don't like that? Let's try this.
Right.
Whereas Marvel was like, no, we had a couple of successes in the beginning. We're just going to stick to that. And we're going to maybe bland it up a little bit to broaden our appeal. But for the most part, if it ain't broke, make 30 movies about it.
And they
now,
have
to be fair, it's starting to break.
Well, yeah. Well, and the thing is that Marvel had a lot of bad movies. People sometimes just come go right past that, but it's because they had a good philosophy of, well, the successes will lift all ships, basically. And that is what happened. People maybe they didn't think this was a good movie, and it wasn't by itself, but as part of a larger thing, it took something bad and made people feel like, well, it's at least mediocre, or I can tolerate it because I'm watching this whole series of things. But then that ran its course, right? I think Endgame was aptly named, because it's like, where do you go from here? And they didn't know. Mm-hmm. They didn't know either. And
still don't.
And still don't. That's right.
I have recently been pondering this, because the Marvels was a big... And the thing is, I said this before, like, now I don't have to watch them all if I don't want. And I still pretty much watched them all and convinced myself I wanted to, with a couple of exceptions in the TV space. And the Marvels was another, like, I'm really tired of it now. Let's get out. And then I was like, oh, but they're doing that Agatha Harkness show. I might watch that. And then, I don't know, something happened in my brain. And here's where I am now. If someone whose opinion I trust tells me a superhero movie or superhero TV show is better than literally anything the MCU has done to date, I might think about watching it. But otherwise, I don't think I'm going to, because whatever I'm excited about in any of them, I watch them and I'm like, I've seen it before and I didn't care that much then. Like, there is no new ground to cover, in my opinion, at least not if you're Disney or Warner Brothers. You're not going to fucking do.
I'm also coming to the conclusion, and tell me what you think of this. I'm coming to the conclusion that the more computer animation you have to put into your live action thing, the more likely that thing would actually be better as actual animation. just animate it.
When I watch all of Jordan Breeding's things, he talks a great deal, a lot of these series, like he did Terminator and things like that, he will talk about the practical effects, and he frequently compares it to any fist fight in a Marvel movie, because it feels weightless and nothing matters. Mm-hmm. And they don't actually blow things up and they don't actually crash things. And even just, you know, I mean, stage combat can still be way more effective than CGI combat.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
but yeah, but if you do it animated, then it's supposed to feel that way. It's comic booky, you know?
Exactly.
Worst air quotes ever. It's comic booky.
You're hoping you can do it with just one hand and that'll cover both.
That was the thing. I'm like, this is book, because normally you do with this, so it's these four. Come right in between here. Comic bookies.
No, one, but I mean,
air quotes. That's gonna be my legacy.
I mean, I think the idea for creators is that if people see this thing and it looks like it's really happening, you know, they'll be immersed in it. It'll be more shocking. It'll be more effective or whatever. But I think there's almost an uncanny valley, you know, not just for how faces look in CGI, but for like anything that happens, you're like, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. You know, you might as well just have it in a cartoon or something where the context, since the whole context is animated, you get a better sense of the stakes than you do when, well, part of this isn't, like, these people aren't, here's the real people, but they're not in real danger.
That is the thing. It becomes a thing where it's like, you stuck cartoons in my live action.
Yeah.
For random shots.
Yeah. And it does not have the effect that you think it will.
And it's the thing, because CG moved along and then HD resolution moved along and suddenly CG looked much worse again.
Yep.
Which actually dovetails quite nicely with something I did this week.
Well, let's talk about that. That was my only big news.
I learned how to make CG. No. in the vein of, have you seen this? No. Okay, we should watch it. That Trish and I like to do these days. I found out my wife had never seen Starship Troopers.
Well, I've never seen that either.
I might recommend it. Here is the thing about Starship Troopers. It is based off a book called Starship Troopers by Robert Heinlein. The book has mixed feelings. in the public eye because it is very militarist, pro-military. Some people say pro-fascism, kind of jingoist in its way. And then they made a movie about it, but it was directed by Lars von Trier. And if there are two things to know about Lars von Trier, it's that all of his movies are satires, and when they come out, nobody is aware that they are satires. This exact thing happened with RoboCop, and I speak as somebody on the ground for this, because I saw Starship Troopers around, I don't think I went to the theater, but I saw it around the time it came out, and I hated it. And I saw it years later, and I'm like, this is genius, because it's a satire. And I don't know how I missed that. And I don't know how the public at large missed. And the exact same thing happened with RoboCop. RoboCop is a satire of the police. And everybody missed it and just thought it was this violent action movie. And some people loved it and hated it for those reasons. And it went on to have a bunch of sequels that didn't get the joke. And Starship Troopers went on to have a couple sequels that didn't get the joke. This is very, very much, very obviously a satire of nationalism, militarism, things like that. It is, I really enjoy it. It is very violent. Most of that violent involves alien bug creature guts, but occasionally people getting their legs ripped off and stuff. But what is interesting is for the mid to late 90s, it's amazing how some of the effects hold up incredibly well. And some of the effects do not. It's such a weird mix. It's very, like, in general, the wide shots and the CGI bugs and everything, amazing. They would be good in a theatrical run today. But then, like, anytime they green screen or realistically blue screened, like, it's so poorly done. And some of the practical effects of, like, body parts and things are, like, so poorly done. It's so weird. I believe it is also the movie that was the first. There's a kind of armor that is used for guards in every sci-fi dystopia movie ever. And I believe Starship Troopers was the first one. I think it's some athletic gear or something. But I believe Starship Troopers was the first one. That's what the military outfit is. And then it shows up in a bunch of others. It also has a huge cast of people who went on to have very great careers generally in a lot of character acting stuff. Except, ironically, the two leads. Casper Van Dien and Denise Richards, who went on to be sad. And Casper Van Dien is particularly impressive because he was riding high when this came out, and he was on such a height that he refused to come back for the sequel, and his career tanked so fast that he came back for the third one that was direct to video. Also, the biggest suspension of disbelief is Denise Richards as a mathematical genius, which is part of this. That's really hard. It's like Tara Reid in Alone in the Dark. You're like, no, I just, it's no, you've made your career on other things. I don't buy you as smart. Little baby Neil Patrick Harris is in, like this is like circa Doogie Howser era Neil Patrick Harris, who does an amazing job, albeit in retrospect, you're like, yeah, you like girls? Right, sure, whatever. It has some very interesting progressive aspects to it, in the same way that Heinlein does. Heinlein had some very progressive but also very regressive views on sexuality and gender, you know, in a Joss Whedon-y sort of way. Like, Joss Whedon made some major strides in some ways that actually were really fucked up in other ways. This movie carries some of that a little bit. Is a very interesting movie, and it's a hilarious satire. But yeah, I don't know how I missed it. I've seen it a few times now. I don't know how I missed it that first time. Anyway, so we saw that. Also, one of the characters in it, I'm like, I think she came back for the sequels. And then she dies. And I'm like, what the hell? And I looked it up. She did come back for the sequels. Just totally different character.
Oh. Okay.
We also watched The Holdovers. Because everybody keeps saying it's really awesome. Hmm. You not familiar with that name?
I don't think so.
It was a bit of a stealthy thing. It's a Focus Features, which is owned by Comcast, which makes me sad, but it's one of those faux indie, you know. It's set in 1970, and it is about Paul Giamatti, the curmudgeonly professor who's stuck chaperoning the children at an all boys school who don't go home for Christmas break. And hijinks ensue. It's listed as a comedy. I would put it more in a dramedy family. I do not believe it got, some people were sad that Giamatti did not get an Oscar nomination for it. Or maybe he did and they were sad he didn't win. I don't know. I he did a great job. I don't know that he needed an Oscar for it, but he did a good job. Also the lead opposite him, this is his first ever acting gig and he does a really good job. I enjoyed it a lot. It is nothing new, particularly. You have seen this sort of movie before, although you don't see it very often anymore. It's one of those coming of age, you and I are not so different kind of movies. Yeah. It deals a bit with class. It deals a bit with growing up. It deals a bit with race, stuff like that, in a way that I think the movie is set in the time frame it is so that you can more readily talk about those things distanced from today. So it's like more approachable. It's nothing earth shattering. It's nothing that's going to change my life. Here's what it is. I've been trying to explain this because Trish liked it okay, but didn't like it as much as me. It makes me think of the kind of movie they used to make that they don't make it anymore, in that I don't think the movie was made hoping to win awards. And nowadays, when you have this sort of coming of age, dramedy sort of thing, it's always Oscar bait. It's a prestige picture or whatever. And this was, and this is a weird fallback because I think it did win awards, but like The Big Chill was not made hoping to win Oscars. The Big Chill was a dramatic comedy about something that somebody had to say about, and it was well-performed and well-produced, and I had a good time. I actually really loved The Big Chill. I don't know why. I am way too young for it, but I love it. This felt like that. It's just a movie that's just a good movie that wanted to be a good movie. And I feel like you can't make this kind of movie, and it either has to be spectacle entertainment of some sort, or it has to be we're going for all the awards. And so I really liked it. It's on Peacock. If anybody's doing Peacock. We are for the year, but it's over there. Yeah, Paul Giamatti was very good. Not a lot of other names you would necessarily recognize, but a lot of very good actors in it. And like I said, the student lead opposite him, this is apparently his first thing, and he did a really amazing job. Yeah, so we saw that. What else I got? What else I got? What else is in the news? Have I talked about Cemetery Keeper on the podcast? Okay. I'm still really loving that game.
On the podcast, I don't know.
If you like Stardew Valley and you like spooky macabre themes, you should play Cemetery Keeper. It is it's on Steam obviously for like $20, but it's on GOG. GOG.com, good old games, GOG.com for $5. at least at present. It's been on sale for a while. And there's that comes with one of the DLCs, but there's like three other DLCs that I recently went and purchased because they're like $2 and change each. It's a huge game. I put 25 hours into it. Tons and tons and tons left. Huh. Really having fun with that. It does get a little grindy in places, but I kind of enjoy it. It's a lot of, you know, building things and unlocking technologies. Finally got zombies up and running. I got a zombie who goes back and forth from my rock quarry to my workshop. That's handy. Yeah, it's a fun time. I enjoy it a lot. I'm playing it a little bit more than Red Dead Redemption 2 these days. I have progressed beyond Chapter 3 in Red Dead, so it's getting dark.
Yeah, gets pretty dark.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there.
Tricky decisions to make. Lots of stuff happens.
No, I didn't figure I got to make many decisions going forward. It's a tragedy. It's because there's already a lot of things I would have decided differently. It is very interesting, though, it being a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are people I like that I know turn out to be really shitty. There are people who are imperiled that I know for a fact won't die or get maimed or anything because I've seen them later. Sorry.
Yeah.
Later. That's my thing, by the way. TM, 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 TM. One-handed air quotes is my thing.
I like it.
Yeah, see, you got to pay me now. You use it. You owe me royalties.
But I did it on your podcast.
We'll talk. My lawyer will be in touch. Oh, my God. What is the deal right now? I mean, I know it happens all the time, but something in the law must recently have changed or something, because absolutely every online service I use has recently had me agree to a new end user agreement specifically dealing with arbitration, specifically with if you're pissed at us, you're not allowed to sue, you have to go through arbitration.
Oh.
And today it was my fucking Roku TV.
Mm.
And I was like, everybody's doing it. Microsoft did it, Disney did it, who, I mean, a lot of them are owned by the same people. Ubisoft, I think, did it, even though I haven't played anything from Ubisoft in years. Everybody. I think Google may have done it. Anyway. Red Dead, yeah. Yeah, we just got to the chapter that's all going to be in the city, so I'm not super looking forward to that. But whatever. Yeah. It's funny, I've discovered that the easiest part of hunting is killing legendary animals.
Easiest, huh?
Yes, for one exact reason. You don't have to worry about the pelt condition.
Mm.
So, like, with all these other animals, if I want perfect pelts to, like, use for things, like, oh, this one needs a bow. Oh, this one needs a small game arrow. Oh, this, like, I can literally, like, what's my biggest fucking rifle? And I can shoot the legendary squirrel in the face. And I still have a legendary squirrel pelt that comes out of it.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. You're right, though.
All it is it takes a little longer because you have to follow the trail. But once you do, just blow the shit out of it. Meanwhile, I'm trying to unlock satchels and things by getting, like, perfect pelts. I've really gotten good at getting perfect rabbit pelts.
Mm.
But everything else. And you only need, like, two ever. And I've done, like, 8 or 9 of them.
I mean, you can unlock some pretty cool outfits and accessories in there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the weird thing. So money is a big part of the game,
mm-hmm.
both narratively and mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
Except me and some people went and robbed a bank. And I've always had all the money I've ever needed ever since then.
Mm.
Because I was like, oh, I'm up to like $300. I can buy something cool finally because I've saved up enough. And then I robbed the bank and my cut was like $2,500. I've just never. So I literally went to the tailor in the city and just bought every piece of clothing that looked good and every outfit, whether I liked it or not. I just bought every outfit. I'm kind of doing a weird Desperado Fistful of Dollars. Kind of like, I have this weird wide brimmed hat now that I'm kind of into. I don't know what that's about, but also I'm up to three horses, but this last one is my favorite. She's flaming red and she's thick. She a big thick horse, and I named her Gertie. She's real nice. I got three of them now, and I think new ones have shown up. I'm like, I only got four spots in the stables. Not willing to get rid of anybody. Well, let's see what happens. But anyway, I do have one other thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
This weekend, we saw at the University of Iowa a production of Into the Woods.
Oh. Yeah, I think you said you were going to do that.
Yes. It was. This is the thing. I've seen a lot of live theater now. And the level of live theater, there's a lot of tells, so that even if like you couldn't necessarily place the ages or whatever, you could tell what kind it was. And there's kids theater, there's high school theater, there's college theater, there's amateur / community theater, and there's professional theater.
Mm-hmm.
The big tell for college theater, besides that it's usually being performed in a college, which admittedly is probably the bigger tell, but college productions always have something to prove. They always have to be different. They always have to be avant-garde and experimental, because the director is always either an alumnus who was invited back to do this and this is their big shot, or a student or grad student, and this is like their final project or something. So I remember when I was in college, we did a real weird ass version of Antigone. And this was a very experimental, in my opinion, version of Into the Woods. It had limited space and budget, and some of the choices were that. Some of the choices seemed to be wholly creative, and some of them were really inspired, and some of them were really fucking weird. It was very interesting. I maintain, I think there are one or two parts where if you were not already familiar with the story, you might have been confused about what happened. We had one bit where somebody played three different parts in the same scene, and even I had a hard time following it, and I've seen that scene a ton. But I got a little thrown. But it had some really cool things that it did, and some neat effects and neat, because that's the thing. It didn't have the budget or the space, so it did some cool things with sort of human puppetry of like multiple groups of people forming a creature kind of thing. Yeah, it had a lot of, and it was very not the classic version we all know. They worked really hard on that. I don't want to nitpick and get into the good and the bad too much, because it's a college thing, and I would encourage anybody who's around, go see it. It was a good time. I do have one thing though that I'm going to complain about. It's very important to me. So we have two Prince Charmings. We all know this. We've seen it. One is the one who pursues Cinderella, and one is the one who pursues Rapunzel. And I believe they are generally referred to as Cinderella's prince, Rapunzel's prince, because they don't have names. They're just Prince Charming, whatever. They're brothers. Early on, Cinderella has a shitty time with her stepsisters and stepmom, and they make her think she might be able to go to the ball, and then they're like, no, you can't go to the ball. You suck. Ha ha. And they leave. Now, in a nod to the original version of Cinderella, there is no fairy godmother. Cinderella goes and prays and whines at her mother's grave.
Yep, that's
and how the ghost of her mother inhabiting a tree is like, no problem, I'll use my ghost magic.
That's how it happens in the Grimm tale, exactly.
Yeah. In this version, they sing the thing, we'll help you out, you'll get to the ball, it's great. But we don't have like a magical quick change effect or whatever. What happens is someone comes out very sort of airily, I would say almost in a fae sort of step, and just sort of comes out and hands two golden slippers to Cinderella and then is gone. No lines or anything. It's just sort of a, and it's very in keeping with the way the show does. There isn't a narrator in this. There's like five narrators and they switch out. Sometimes they're playing smaller parts, like one plays the cow and one plays the birds and stuff and things like that. So this is all very in keeping. And then Cinderella does whatever her last bit is for the scene and then leaves. And the next time we see her, she's in all of her finery. No problem with any of this, except the person who hands her the slippers is Cinderella's prince in his full Cinderella's prince costume. Why? Other than arguably the witch, there is not a worse and more confusing person to do that part. And there are no lines to that part. It is literally just sort of skip on, hand slippers, skip off. Why? Why did they do that?
Do you think they thought it would be funny?
Well, at that point, you don't know who he is. He hasn't shown up yet.
Oh.
And in fact, to the degree that Trish, and I'm guessing quite a few other people, didn't notice. And at the time, I thought it was, because he was dressed in like a suit and nice red, I thought it was who I was going to be, like the prince's steward or something, which I was like, that's fine. It's a smaller role or whatever. No, this is a fucking prince. And her prince, even Rapunzel's prince would have somehow been better, I think. But you had so many other options. I don't know what I'm thinking. So
that's interesting.
For that and that alone, this play is trash. No one should see it. No, it was good. It's good. It's very interesting. It's very unique take on it. In a lot of ways, still the same songs, still well sung. Check it out if you are in the area. Cause I think it is continuing this next weekend. Of course, this will come out like on Thursday. So you might be hard pressed. And I know the night we went, it was sold out. So I don't know. Anyway, let's do an email.
Okay. Azure Talon.
Hey, we got a lot of mileage out of him last time.
Yeah. And he just signs this one Azure Talon. That's all it says at the bottom. Usually has a little fancy something or other.
It's been too busy posing He-Man figures in weird crouching positions. I don't know why I still follow him on Facebook.
Pre-hosts, he calls us.
Pre-hosts?
Yeah, what's that mean?
He's going to murder us and take over our podcast?
Pre-hosts. Pre-hosts. There's probably an explanation that it's just not coming to me.
Me neither. If you know what the fuck Azure Talon is talking about, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and tell us what the fuck is Azure Talon talking about.
Part two of this series of Can I Write Worthwhile Emails? Plus, what's your take? Okay, so less advice and more topic. Less advice and more topic of times. He's messed up his GM lately. Luckily, I don't think I have ever had the dishonor of really, really screwing someone up and making them feel horrible. As a GM, I guess he's saying. There was a small exception I will get into some other day, but for now. So this is all kind of him winding up for the pitch, and here's the pitch. Cheeseburger lover, and those are capitalized, so that's a proper name, I guess. Cheeseburger lover and Veramond were in this group, but both were not there for this season of Scion.
These are names I used to know, is why he mentioned them.
Okay. This is a game where the players take on the role of the children of ancient gods. Oh, because so they're Scion. Okay. This is a game where the players take on the role of children of ancient gods, and their power eventually becomes extreme. Cheeseburger lover and Veramond. Was Veramond a listener?
Yes.
Okay. We're kind of the brain. What's that?
I know who Veramond is.
Yeah, I think he was a listener for a while. Anyway, Cheeseburger Lover and Veramond were kind of the brains of this group, both in and out of character. So all we had in this particular scenario was Cheeseburger Lover's brother, Mr. Poor Impulse Control. and the dub and
man, that family is terrible at naming their children.
And this is another name, the dumbest couple in the world. They venture to a quarry to deal with a dragon made of blood, yada yada. And come out deciding to steal someone I mentioned on the way in. Steal someone? Okay. A literal dump truck full of dynamite. The three remaining players, of course, decide to steal the truck. I'm thinking, what are they going to do with that? Try to throw it at the moon and blow it up. Oh, okay. Crisis averted. Cheeseburger Lover and Vermont were not happy with this plan. And that's it. Then he signs it Azure Talon. What have I just read? I don't understand. When? Do you understand what he's, is there, what, I mean, there's a question here?
No, I don't.
Maybe I read it wrong.
I think maybe this is just a charming anecdote.
So this is a scenario where in the game, a couple players decide to steal a truck full of dynamite to throw at the moon to blow it up to solve a particular problem. And two of the players who he's saying are the smart ones in this group didn't like this plan.
Yeah.
So is there a dilemma?
There's not another email right afterwards that Azure Town was like, oh, I got cut off or something.
No.
Yeah, that is too much to hope for.
This
was probably already written, but I feel like somehow this is revenge for how I treated the last email. I don't know.
Is there a dilemma here? Like, okay, so you've got some smart players and some dumb players, and the dumb players do something dumb, and the smart players don't like it. So what do you do? I don't know.
The best and worst things in a tabletop role-playing game come about when the players are like, oh, this is where the story's going? Yeah, fuck that. Take a left here. And it can be some of the best stuff because they are often very invested in that. And it shows you a lot of their character developing. And it makes you as the GM get creative and run with it. And it's them really owning their story. And that's great if you are up to the task, which is not always the case. But it can also be one of the worst things because sometimes players do this because they're bored or they like to see the world burn. They're like, yeah, fuck it, let's do this instead. We're gonna, like, great examples is, yeah, oh that's the person giving us the mission, I punch them in the face. That kind of shit. Stealing a truck of dynamite to throw at the moon sounds like the second one.
Just someone trolling the GM.
Oodles more context, but it sounds like, fuck it, let's just do that. It'll be funny. I mean, I have to treat this email as though it's asking for advice. I don't know. If it is meant to be just an entertaining anecdote, rewrite. You need to do a couple more drafts of this and run it by someone else before you put it on a podcast. Although I guess we are the someone else. Happy Jacks might not even read this because it's so broken linguistically. Like, I'm making up what this email means because it's
I have no idea.
And William is much nicer and he wants to refute what I'm saying and he can't, you'll note, because it's just nonsense. So I'm turning it into something and pretending there was a question for advice in here. I mean, the big thing when They're, in my opinion, as a failed GM, there are two ways to handle this. One is out of character, which is where you're like, are you just being a dick? Come on. Why are you doing that? Like, explain this to me. Why it feels, and you have to be careful about that one, because depending on how much they are trying to be a dick, or this is just an impulse they have, you might come off as a dick and or might be seen as railroading. And that is something to watch out. But if you're like, what are you just doing this because you're bored? Like, what is this about? This is kind of crazy. I think this is the least recommended of the two options, but this is an option to be like, what? And sometimes it's as simple as somebody says it and you look at them and like, are you seriously doing that in character? And about 8 times out of 10, I guess 4 times out of 5, they'll be like, no, I'm just kidding. So you got that. The other option is run with it and make something happen. So I don't know what crisis was being averted by, because again, email didn't say, said crisis, as though that was a thing that had been set up earlier in the email, was not. But if blowing up the moon would avert whatever the crisis is, we'll probably have a lot of other impact on the story.
Probably.
And you can run with that. Now, in this case, it might be very extreme. So what you can do is sort of a blending of the two. And when you say, okay, you want to steal this dynamite, blow up the moon, are we as a group prepared for the fact that this is fundamentally going to change the game? Like, this was a modern setting where you guys had divine powers. It's gonna become Thundar the Barbarian, which I'm okay with if you're okay with that. Because that's when Veramon and Cheeseburger Lover, I'm like, I'm really not. I'm into the genre we have now. It's like, well, blowing up the moon could affect the genre. A sentence I never thought I would have to say, because it's one of those sentences that like no human should ever have to say.
Yeah, well,
because of course. But yeah, blowing up the moon in general gonna affect the genre. So maybe it's that. At that point you can also be like, I feel like these are fundamental changes that will impact gameplay, and the group as a whole out of character doesn't seem on the same page. Maybe we should stop and talk about this. And of course, the easier way, depending on how you're running the game, is cheese it such that they are unsuccessful in getting the truck of dynamite, or cheese it so that they miss the moon. Things like this. That's another way, is to just be like, oh, you had a dumbass idea. All right, we're gonna do that. Oh no, look, you didn't manage to do it. Aw, beans.
Couldn't that be perceived as railroading by itself?
Yeah, you have to do it in a way that doesn't look like you. Like, that's the thing. You have to be like, oh, I rolled my dice. Oh, my dice were so much higher than yours. Oh no. As opposed to you go east so there's a Tyrannosaurus in the way, which is a very famous example of railroading. It was an internet thing, but somebody like wanted them to go a certain way in the game and they wanted to go a different way, and so he spontaneously put a Tyrannosaurus just on this plane in the middle of nowhere to stop them going that way. So yeah, that could be. Yeah, no, if you make them just fail, then it can be perceived as railroading unless you really make it look like it's not. Because that's the thing also. I mean, and I don't know. Again, so little context here. So I don't know what kind of divine powers they have. To me, in almost every situation, throwing a truck of dynamite at the moon would be pretty impossible, even with godlike powers. To say nothing of a truck of dynamite probably isn't going to destroy the moon.
Correct. It wouldn't even make...
That's also a thing.
An impressive crater, probably, compared to the other craters up there.
So... Yeah, the most likely thing is that there is just so much more to the story that we don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, find a person in your life. Again, that's, we probably are that person. But you find a person and say, like, so this email, read it. Does this make sense to you? Because if you had brought this to me, I would have been like, so many questions.
Okay, so I
told you.
I have a question that might be similar to what he was getting at, but even if it wasn't, I still have it. What if you're
right into the hat?
What if you're the GM and you do have like one group of people that are very like they're very sophisticated in how they play role-playing games, and another group that's not? Like, there's two people over here, very sophisticated, creative, all that. They kind of get what role-playing games, how they work, and you know what kinds of things are going to keep the game going versus the kinds of things that are going to make it, you know, tank. And then you have this other group of people that are in the same game, but they're not as sophisticated. Like, they don't even realize the whole pick up the truck and throw it at the moon thing is like doesn't work. So how do you run the game in a way that is respectful to this group's sort of very sophisticated take? And they're, you know, to enjoy the game, they're going to have to, it's going to have that sophisticated level. But this group that is, they don't mean to be trolls or whatever. They're just not very sophisticated at doing this. See what I mean? How do you strike a balance between those two people, those two groups?
I mean, the short answer is you and your friends are getting together to play a pickup basketball game. And some of your friends are really good at basketball. And some of your friends have never played basketball. Mm. How do you make that work?
Yeah.
And the answer is mostly both sides of the equation have to be aware that they are on those sides of the equation and act accordingly. Mm. The brand new role player should be aware that they don't know what the fuck they're doing yet. And more importantly, the experienced role player should be there to help facilitate and, you know, provide opportunities to the new player, because they also have been new players at one time. And, you know, be patient when we have to take a while with this character to work out this shit. Try and it within character, sort of diegetically include the character in things so that they have the opportunity to come up with stuff. And I am always very big on a briefing and debriefing in a gaming session, but I'm always very big on that in life. Probably to my fault. And again, I don't know that I've ever been a successful GM, so I'm a hard one to say on this, but yeah, you have to, if either side can't cope with the other, then it's just not a functional group. There are experienced role players who are like, fucking noobs, I cannot sit around while you figure out what a character is. Like, I can't cope with how bad you are at being involved in the world or whatever. And there are new people who are like, these people take it way too seriously, or these people are way too wrapped up in boring stuff. I just want to go kill things, stuff like that. And if that's the case, it might not be a compatible group.
Interesting. So, so that thing you were talking about before, where you might have to sort of like someone suggests something and you're like, okay, so all of us need to be on the same page here about what this world is, what this genre is. So maybe we should have a conversation about this. It would be appropriate, maybe, instead of if the GM doesn't do that or doesn't think to do that, for one of the other players to go, like, you know, when one of their party decides to do this, to go, hold on a second. That's an interesting idea, but
this is a very difficult thing to do, because you don't want to be like, oh, let's step outside of this so that I can convince your character to do the things I want your character.
Yeah, right.
It's when your character is doing something that is going to drastically change the game for everyone involved, yeah. and everyone involved is not here for it.
Yeah, right.
The same way that on a more one-on-one level, I think a DM or GM or keeper or whatever should always be upfront out of character if they're in a situation where they're like, this could kill your character, like more so than usual. This is a time where you could actually die if you follow down this path. Are you okay with that risk? If not, maybe your character doesn't decide to do this. And in the same way, it'd be like, okay, hold up. And some people are not going to agree with this at all. Some people want it to be that way, and the antagonism between characters that forms after that is good, and that's where the meat of it is. And then you become enemies instead or whatever. But I'm of a sort that I'd be like, okay, hold on. If you do that, this party will probably break up because, well, the easy example is I'm a holy paladin of the god of good and justice. If you murder that person for no reason, one of us will have to leave the party and probably make a new character or leave the group. And potentially stealing a truckload of dynamite and throwing it at the moon is that kind of thing. Also in that situation, if you don't like it and you don't think your character would, the easy answer also in there is in character, you're like, what? You're going to steal a truck of dynamite and throw? That's dumb as hell, dude. I'm not involved. Have fun. And then then the party gets split, and then potentially at some point, I mean, maybe you follow that through for a little while. Maybe you find out. It also depends on your ability as a GM. There are some things that I think a really good experienced GM or a really good improvisational GM should just run with, but like a beginning GM or a GM of my level should be like, I can't do that. We're gonna have to go in a different direction because I am not the game master for that. I do not feel comfortable handling that. And you often get that in like tone, so like some, and you get it for players too, but like some groups and some GMs can handle sex and seduction and things in a game, and others really can't. And the same thing with players. And that's a very commonly held view with a lot of groups now, is if you're starting a campaign, especially, everybody gets together before you start and are like, what's off the table? What elements of story do any of us flat out say we won't do? And I've had ones where it's like, well, I was like, no rape, thank you. And somebody else was like, no real explicit sex stuff, I'm not into that, they're fine. And then somebody else, not a joke, was like, I don't like clowns. And this is a game that I could see somebody bringing clowns in. Even in a non-scary capacity, clowns freak me out. Can we not have clowns? And we're like, okay, it's on the list. The story will not have clowns in it, and that's fine. That kind of thing. The game I've been playing in, at the beginning, we had a talk about what sort of tone we wanted. Do you want this Zack Snyder? Do you want this Scooby-Doo? Like, that kind of thing. So those are important.
That's an interesting continuum, Zack Snyder and Scooby-Doo. I mean, it's legit.
There you go.
Legit.
Well, I picked Scooby-Doo because that's literally what we settled on for the level of our game. Mm-hmm. And Zack Snyder was just the biggest opposite I could think of. The least Scooby-Doo.
The least. The anti-Scooby. The anti-Scoob. That's what Zack Snyder is. The anti-Scoob.
Every legit few months to a couple years, I get on this kick again where I want to watch the Mitchell and Webb shows. David Mitchell and Robert Webb had a sketch comedy show, a few of them actually, that I really like, and I'll find them on YouTube and watch them. And I've been watching them recently, and there's a great one of this gay couple planning a party and they're doing the invite list. And they're like, we got to invite Fred and Daphne. And they're like, oh, and Velma. Yeah, because those three together are really great. And it's so funny when she does the bit about losing her glasses. Why didn't she just get contacts? And the other one's like, I think it's a lesbian thing. I'm not sure. But then they're like, if we invite them, they might, we should probably invite their friend. They're like, what's his name? I don't know. He goes by Shaggy. And he's like, so, and they doing this whole thing of like, he's clearly trying to like get off some heavy drug or something because he's off. And then they're like, oh God. And he's going to bring his dog. And like, and the dog freaks out all the time and stuff. I just like every time anything happens, that dog jumps into his arms. Like he was expecting to shit everywhere. And he spent clearly a really long time trying to get the dog to talk, and the dog cannot, which is especially weird because I don't know if you know, but the dog has a nephew who's also a dog who speaks English very well and is way more brave, if a bit sort of aggressive. And they do this whole saga. It's very funny.
Are those the guys that did the bit where the Nazis are talking to each other about whether or not they're baddies?
Are we the baddies?
Are we the baddies?
That is them. I was trying to figure out I was just saying to Trish the other day, there are two bits that they did that are tied maybe for which is the most famous. And one is the Nazi who realizes there's skulls on the cap and they might be the bad guys, which is big enough that it's a meme now. So that's one. And then the other one was homeopathic A&E emergency room. And so like a guy comes in and they're like, oh, he got hit by a blue Ford Mondeo. And they're like, okay, take a piece of a blue Ford Mondeo, put it in some water, agitate it, dilute it in some more water, agitate it again, dilute it in some more water, agitate it a third time, and put 3 drops under his tongue. If that doesn't cure him, I don't know what will. And like, there's a guy, they try to extend his lifeline with a pen to see if it'll work. And then, and it's a whole medical drama. And at the end, the guy's like, I hate losing him like this. It's like, well, come on, you lose the occasional cancer patient or flu or measles or all these different things. Like, but if you got somebody who just has a general sense of unease or a case of the willies or even just more money than sense, you're going to be there with a concoction that is essentially water in one hand and a huge invoice in the other. And it's just a great rip on homeopathy. And that one also, I've had a lot of people who don't know my interest in these people and who don't watch a lot of British comedy who spontaneously have sent me that one.
Nice.
So I think those two fight for it. Anyway, we're out of time. So in conclusion, Azure Talon, go to the blog and tell us what the fuck you're talking about. Because we'd all like to know. Because then we might have more to say about it. But also at this point, I just want to know. Like, as we've gone through it, more and more questions arise in my head that I don't know what you were saying, and I'm curious, but you've piqued my interest. That is the only difference between what you wrote and just Lorem Ipsum, is that Lorem Ipsum does not pique my curiosity, but this has. So please go in the blog and tell us what the hell you're talking about. And if any of the rest of you think you know what he was talking about, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us what you think he was talking about. We'll make a game of it. Everybody say what you think he was talking about, and then he can come in and judge who was right. Also, despite our harsh treatment of Azure Talon, please write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We're usually nicer to people who aren't him. Usually. And listen again next week, I guess. And like, play Graveyard Keepers. Good game. Also Red Dead Redemption 2. Also, keep reaching for the stars.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, Visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.